This is Karen Lyle with a Treasure Island Museum Spotlight, brought to you in partnership with the Academy of Art University School of Multimedia Communications. Today's interview is with Thomas Kuhn, who was a flight engineer on the Pan Am Clipper flying boats that took off from Treasure Island on their way to the Far East.
A seaplane named China Clipper made the first trip. The publicity for that flight caused all flying boats on that air route to become known popularly as China Clippers.
When a giant four-motor, 26-ton flying boat takes off...
Well, I was a flight engineer for Pan American. Basically, as an aeronautical engineer, and a licensed aircraft mechanic. And on the airplane, the pilots held the wheel and steered the airplanes, and the engineer operated the engines and the air conditioning systems, the electric systems. Sort of like the engineer on an ocean liner, same idea. But with a big four-engine airplane, there were so many complicated systems that the pilots didn't have time to fool with that. They just flew the airplane. And the engineer took care of the chores.
This China Clipper was the first of three Martin M130 four-engine flying boats built for Pan American Airways. It was used to inaugurate the first commercial trans-Pacific air service from San Francisco to Manila in November 1935.
My first trip to Hawaii was in August of 1943 on the China Clipper. It took 22 and a half hours to get from San Francisco to Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. 22 and a half hours. But we had a double crew, and we had some bunks where we could take a nap. But it was still a long, long ride. Yeah.
The initial flight carried only airmail. Passenger service began in October 1936 with three Clippers. They flew from San Francisco Bay to Pearl Harbor, Midway Atoll, Wake Island, to Guam, and to Manila Bay. That took 6 days of approximately 60 hours of flying time at a cruising speed of 130 miles per hour.
For more information on the free lectures on Treasure Island, visit www.treasureislandmuseum.org. This is Karen Lyle with the Treasure Island Museum Spotlight.
Thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tuttle with you, coast to coast, around the world on American Forces Radio Network. It's Tuesday at 9:40 Pacific time. That's when we do our segment on sailing, which is brought to you by SailSportTalk.com. And as always, co-hosting the segment from SailSportTalk.com is Karen Lyle, who is in studio, and you can see on Twitch.tv right now. How you doing, Karen?
I'm doing great, Rick. How are you doing?
Good. You had some interesting thoughts about sailing and spectator sports, and you were nice enough to invite me to the Warrior game on Saturday night, because Nick Nurse, who's a friend of yours, the head coach of the Raptors, left you a couple of tickets, and it got you thinking once you went to the game, didn't it?
It did. Well, actually, you know, this is my first time in the Chase Center because they built it, and then we had the pandemic, and there were no fans. So the fans are back. And we were sitting there, pretty nice seats there on the fourth row in section 105, mm-hmm. and I could see the game. And I was thinking about this because I have played basketball. You have played basketball, didn't mm-hmm. you?
Most Americans do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There we are. But I had never watched a pro game from that perspective. And, you know, seeing the center and, you know, you were there. I mean, the best person to be with at a basketball game, because you know you could show me what the relevant statistics were and all of those kind of things, and you know, because there was so much sensory input to be able to know what to focus on in addition to the game.
The stimuli is overwhelming with the music and the flames and the dancing and everything else. Yeah,
Yeah, and but being there live, I mean, you know, it really was very interesting, and it got me to thinking about sailing as a sport, and you know, how SailGP especially is trying to develop this similar experience, because when they set up the place over in between the Golden Gate and the Golden Gate Yacht Club and the St. Francis Yacht Club, they set up a stadium, they have big screens, they do a very similar thing to what the Chase Center was doing with the music and trying to engage the fans and things like that. And, you know, I'm really wondering what takes, you know, what really interests the fans, I mean, your sports fans. You have fans that listen to you all week long, you know, as you're telling your show for years. What is it that draws fans in to talking about the sport outside of the game, outside of the week after the game? You know, what brings them into it?
Well, they have to have a connection to it, obviously. You know, if you have never followed a sport and then your son or daughter or boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever is in it, then you're going to care. Other than that, unless you love that sport, you're only going to watch if there's some sort of connection, some sort of familiarity to it, and some sort of love for the sport. And so I think the problem with sailing is twofold. Number one, none of us have ever sailed in our lives. You know, well, you have, but I mean, we just don't. So we have no idea what it is. And two, you can't see anything, and I have no idea who's winning and who's not winning. And so there's no connection with my heart, and then with my mind, I have no idea what's going on. So it loses on both of those ends right there. So the goal is to get people connected to it somehow. I don't know how, outside of, you know, putting your boyfriend or girlfriend on the boat, but that's not going to happen for everyone. But to me, because that's harder to do, the number one thing is to, it's sort of like hockey had this problem too, where you couldn't see the puck for a long time, and the way they cover it on TV now is much, much better. They did that with soccer too, where they would sort of show the whole pitch at one time and it looked like ants, and then they finally realized we need to have three cameras and we need to home in. We never should show more than 10 rows of fans because we should be pitch side up a little bit. Sailing somehow, some way has to find a way to make it attractive for Joe Blow. You know what's going on, and I don't know what's going on. And I'm a huge sports fan, and I know lots of sports, and I have no idea what's going on. So it try to explain it on a more prosaic level, and then make people aware of what's actually happening, I think.
Well, I think it was interesting when I was sitting in the Warriors versus Raptors game, you know, at the Chase Center with you. You know, I know something about basketball, so I understand, you know, the team throws through the hoop and, you know, when one player takes it from another, and I could see the skill of the players because I knew what I could do and I knew that they could do things I couldn't do. So
right.
You kind of know and you can see the human skill. But, you know, knowing something about the rules, you know, like you were talking about the fouls or, you know, how those things, you know,
right.
happen.
I was explaining personal fouls, team fouls,
right.
television timeouts. Yeah, free throws, when you get to shoot three, when you get to shoot two, when you get a one and one, when you get an and one. But here's the thing, Karen. We were in row five, like you say, and so it's very exciting because we see these world-class athletes doing things we can't do. If I was in a SailGP boat, you know, that close to SailGP, I would find it exhilarating and thrilling. But when you're on the shore and you're at the same level, and I know at the America's Cup in New Zealand, you could get up on a hill. It's the proximity, too, because if something is so far away that you need binoculars, that's the other thing, too. If we somehow could find a way to get it close, because when it's close, like you saw with the NBA game, it's so much more compelling than if you're in the last row. We saw the fans that were sitting up at blimp level. It's still fun, but it's way, way less fun when you're that far away.
Well, one of the things that is you know, interest to me about the relationship of the rules and how that engages you is, you know, I was just taking a sailing lesson, you know, this last night, and they were talking about the rule about, you know, who has the right of way on the boat. You know, so you have two boats, and if you have one on a starboard tack or one on a port tack or one overtaking, you've got all of that stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a difference between what what happens with racing and what happens with sailors on the bay. And if you know something about the rules, then you know that there's a different rule for racers than there are for sailors. And sailors and racers engage on the bay when it's not a pro game, and they have a different rule, and you can have collisions as a result because a racer may not realize that they're on it. They can't operate on that rule when they're not in a race, or if someone's coming through.
So SailGP, they don't clear out that section.
They
on
do.
The bay?
So for a pro game, they will actually set aside. The Coast Guard gets involved. They set aside. Nobody comes in. They have people minding the perimeter, and so that no one can come through the field, basically. And it is close to the shore because they're actually bringing the proximity closer to the fans, so you can see. And those boats are. You saw how fast they were when you were going over the bridge.
They come out of the water.
I mean, you can see how fast they are from the shore.
It's exciting.
It is. It really engages you. It's not like, the ocean race, right, where you they're traveling at night and you hear about them over days, which is still interesting,
sure,
but not in the same way that engages you. You know, you have that kind of visceral engagement. I'm wondering, if there are, you've been 138 shows we've done. How has your view of sailing changed in the time from the time you started to now?
I think, I'm much more respectful of the craft, of what people do, especially, guys like Sir Robin Knox Johnston, who's my favorite guest. And, we've had a blind sailor in here. We've had a lot of kids in here as well. I think one of the, especially with the Richmond Yacht Club too, and yacht clubs in the Bay Area, making sailing more available to people who can't afford it, bringing a little bit more diversity to it. As well, and just learning about, because I had a rudimentary understanding of the America's Cup and thing, but things like that, but just how much innovation has gone in. Just since we started the show, we've seen innovations in sail and sail material and foils and all that. And so I've learned a ton about, lasers and dinghies and all these other, terms, and a mainsail and all that stuff. So, it's more, I thought it was a little more elitist. It still is, but I thought it was a little more elitist than it is. It's nice to see it's a little more down home than I thought it was.
Do you get interested in the boats and the technology, and I kind of get a little geeky on those things,
For me, it's, well, as I said, my dad was a lieutenant commander in the Navy, and so I grew up going on ships, huge ships, and seeing. I never went out to sail on a tour, obviously, but I liked going out on the bay and going fishing when I was a kid. I prefer motorboats, and I prefer boats that have a steering wheel. I have zero interest in sailing, like letting the wind take you around. Like, I don't think you could pay me to go on a boat where you were using wind, because I'm a wimp. I just want to drive it like a car. But the thing I love about sailing with sails is I'm a history guy, and I love adventure and stories of, going to tropical islands and then having a genocide there. No, that's not what I mean. reading about Magellan and reading about Captain Cook and Pitcairn Island with the Bounty. I love tales of the seven seas like that. So I'm more interested in those tall ships of yore, and not so much, getting out on the bay, coming out of Sausalito with some, rich guy's boat.
Well, we had the captain of the tall ship, Lady Washington.
That's
as
right.
as one of our guests, and we followed the Lady Washington going up Aberdeen. So there are tall ships. I think there's about 200 of them in the United States today.
Don't we get like a fake Golden Hind here now and then? Have you ever seen that one?
I haven't.
Yeah, Sir Francis Drake's boat. They sail it in every once in a while. I just wonder where that's actually.
Well, I think I have seen that on the bay, from my boat.
I wonder where they keep that thing.
I'm going to have to look that one up.
I was also on the Potomac, which Reagan brought up from the bottom of the Potomac, and then it's now in Oakland, and once a month they take you out on a little cruise, FDR's boat. That was fun to go on that thing.
Well, and that's certainly a piece of history, because it was, it was FDR's boat, and, it's a museum now.
Yeah.
And so you have, we have an audience in the American Forces Network. So certainly anything that we have to do that touches on, service.
Sure.
For for the American forces is always of interest.
No doubt, and we have you know, the Liberty ships, the Jeremiah O'Brien, which we still have here in the Bay, bringing home a lot of our brave men and women from Europe after VE Day as well. So yeah, there's so much history. Bill Clinton closed all the military bases here, but growing up before he did that, I mean, there was so much military with the Presidio and Alameda and Mare Island and everything else. But that's kind of all been closed down now.
Well, there's such a diversity of interest and fans. I mean, with what, 100 million people who are listening to our show?
100 million? I thought it was just Dominic and Darren.
It seems like that when we're here. You told me once. I said, you know, it seems like we're the only ones here. And you went, no.
I know. Just when you think that. No, I've said some things, and then literally years later, people will bring it up. And I'm like, oh, you were listening, huh? Yeah, you always know me. But anyway, I don't mean to sound negative about sailing. I'm fascinated by it. It's like I said, I'm a wimp, and I just want to drive a boat like a car. That's what.
Well, I think powerboats are great. You know, I grew up on a powerboat with my dad, and I just fell in love with sailing. I think you just haven't had the right experience yet.
I haven't had any experience.
That's right. So we're going to have to, and I came to a basketball game with you, so you're going to have to come sailing with me sometime.
I have to go there and get jettisoned in the middle of the bay.
The winter's a good time because the winds aren't too high. So it's, you know, it's a good time for wimps.
All right. I might have to wash my hair that day. We'll see about it. Karen Lyle, SailSportTalk.com. Thanks for coming in. In person, I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back.